All right, so I found an article. I just did my life in a double shave for the day, so I feel like $1 million. You can check it out. I just put the video up. I shave my own head. I've been doing it for years. I make little videos out of it, tell you what's going on during each time I do it. So that's up and going. So I found this article, and it's pretty cool. I'm gonna read it. Because this is computer. Anything computer doesn't necessarily have to be older computer, but it can be anything. And gaming. So MRAM breakthrough promises to revolutionize computer data storage via magnetism. So I'm hearing a lot of things about magnetism for energy as well. One day I did a thing about energy, how the manipulation of energy is how all electronics work. And normally we only manipulate electricity, but there's a way to manipulate magnetism to open up gates and all that stuff. So in Japan, the future of memory might not lie in electrical circuits, but in the precise manipulation of a magnetic field. There you go. There's your manipulation. So you take any energy and you manipulate it, and therefore you can make it into electronics. This is what I've come up with. Demonstrate now approach to strong digital information that can dramatically reduce the power consumption of anything from smart phones to data centers, while maintaining the speed and reliability we've come to expect from modern devices. As memory demands continue to grow, so right now we're in terabytes. I've learned this from my buddy Zippy. Next one is petabytes. And then there's exabytes, zetabytes, and I think finally yottabytes. More increasingly, more and more. Tens of millions more of each. So right now we're at terabytes. Next one we're going to is petabytes. So how do you put all that? Where do you get the storage? Where does it go? I was told from Zippy, my AI buddy, that petabytes, exabytes, and zettabytes are already in use, like in Google, big servers and stuff like that. We as consumers have only just seen the beginning of terabytes. We're only at, I think I saw as high as 18 terabytes for I was going to get a really big storage to try to put everything together in one. So 18 I'm seeing. So we're not even really haven't even tapped into terabytes yet. But petabytes is, I think, like 1,000 times more per. And then so on and so on as you go up the ladder there. So that's why it's interesting to see what this says about memory. Memory demands continue to grow in an increasingly digital world. The development marks a significant step towards more efficient and sustainable computer technologies. Like the transition from mechanical to electrical calculators. This breakthrough details in advanced science a new era how we store and process information. The advancement centers technology. It's called magnetoresistive random access memory. Try to say that one more. Ooh. Magnetoresistive random access memory. MRAM. Which we don't have yet, which has emerged as promising candidate for the next-gen computer system memory due to its speed, reliability, and compatibility with existing semiconductor manufacturing process. Traditional computer memory faces a significant challenge. It requires constant power to maintain stored information, similar to how a light bulb needs continuous electricity to stay lit. So even if you, any sort of a laptop, if you shut it off, you need that other little battery inside there. The CMOS battery has constant power. That's what they mean. Without that CMOS battery, then everything gets wiped out. Or if the CMOS battery was bad. So this MRAM, however, uses magnetic states to store information, making it non-volatile. Meaning it maintains stored data even when powered off. That's huge. Much like how a refrigerated magnet keeps its magnet properties without any power sources. A refrigerator magnet. I'm not sure what that is. Well, obviously it's in a refrigerator. But as MRAM devices rely on a non-volatile magnetized state rather than a volatile charge state in capacitors. They are a promising alternative to DRAM, which we have now, in terms of low power consumption and a standby state, says somebody. I stopped saying the names because it's so hard. Gives me a schematic about it. Shows direction of magnetization. Says electrical field source. And then it's got some other words here. F-E-R-R. Ferromagnetic materials. CO2 F-E-S-I. And then a vanadium. V-atomic layer. And then a piezoelectric material. So it's like a diagram of how it moves around and produces something. Current MRAM technology faces its own challenges, particularly in how data is written to the memory. Traditionally, MRAM devices rely on electric currents to write data, but this approach becomes increasingly problematic as devices get smaller, requiring more power to operate efficiently. So it still needs power, though. I'm missing something here. The process also generates heat. Ah, there it is. Anytime you do an energy, you're producing heat. That's always a big thing. Generates heat through what's known as the Joule heating, further increasing energy consumption. Imagine trying to write with a pencil that gets hotter and heavier as the paper gets smaller. Well, that's a good analogy. Interesting. The research team tackled this challenge by creating a specialized layer structure combining a magnetic material called CO2FESI with the piezometric crystals known as PMN-PT. When an electric field is applied to this combination, it creates a mechanical strain that can flip the magnetization direction in the CO2FESL layer, essentially writing a digital bit of information without using electric current. Huh. Kind of understand what that means. This approach is more like using a rubber stamp. Regardless of its size, it requires the same amount of pressure to make an impression. Okay, I get that. That's a good analogy there, too. The researchers achieved a particularly strong version of this effect, known as the electromagnetic effect, by carefully engineering a crystal structure of their materials. They discovered that by inserting an ultra-thin layer of vanadium between the magnetic and piezoelectric layers, they can enhance the interaction between them significantly, improve the overall stability of the device. So you're adding all those different layers of stuff. I can't say the words pretty good. It's V-A-N-A-D-I-M. And the other one was P-I-E-Z-O electric layers. So this shows me another diagram. Amorphous layer and then Claire interface. It goes from an amorphous layer to a Claire interface. Think of the team's innovation as being able to flip a microscope compass needle using an electric field rather than another magnet. By carefully adjusting the thickness of both the vanadium and the CO2FESI layers down to measurements just a few atomics thick, they achieve precise control over this magnetic switch behavior. This fine-tuning capability allows them to achieve what's known as a giant magnetoelectric field, measuring over 10 with an arrow up minus 5 seconds per meter, surpassing the performing of similar devices without the vanadium layer. With the demonstration of this new memory technology, researchers have shown that the future of computing doesn't necessarily require choosing between performance and efficiency. By harnessing the interaction between electric fields and magnetic materials, they open up new possibilities for memory devices that could transform everything from mobile phones to large-scale computer infrastructures. Now my question is, where do you get that material? And I'm sure there's other materials out there on other, like the moon and all that. Or we got Mars, maybe we'll get there and find some new materials there. So I wonder where that material comes from. The Van Allen layer and the other one, the PO and the CO2, those three different ones. Paper summary. Methodology explanation. The researchers created their device by building up layers of materials using a technique called molecular beam epitaxy. Epitaxy. They started with the piezoelectric PMN-PT crystal. Added an ultra-thin layer of vanadium. Not vanadium, but vanadium. Oh, maybe it's vanadium. Vanadium. Ranging from 0.3 to 2 nanometers thick. And topped it off with a layer of CO2 FeSi. Varying from 10 to 30 nanometers thick. So that's much thicker. They then used various analytical tools, including X-ray diffraction and electron microscopy, to study the crystal structure and magnetic properties of their samples. The team found that the device exhibited the strongest magnetic effect when used at 0.3 meters thick vanadium layer and a 30 nano thick of the CO2 FeSi layer. Under these conditions, they achieved a magnetoelectric coefficient exceeding 10 arrow up minus 5 per second, while maintaining distinct magnetic states at zero electric field. The system demonstrated reliable switching behaviors and stable at room temperature. That's another thing about temperature there. I know for quantum states, you have all things would be really cold. Because everything produces the heat. Same with electricity. CPUs, and you have a heat sink, and then you have a fan. Same deal. While promising, the researcher was conducted using relatively large crystal substances. Scaling technology down to the size of a commercial memory device will require additional development. I mean, how small can we actually go? That's what my other question is. The study also focused primarily on fundamental physics properties rather than practical device implications. So turning that into just RAM that you can use for your computer. The research demonstrates a viable pathway towards more energy-efficient memory devices. The ability to control magnetism using electric fields rather than currents could significantly reduce power consumption in future computer systems. The team's approach by using vanadium as an interface layer provides a new tool for engineering similar magnetoelectric systems. Funding and disclosures. The research was supported by various Japanese funding agencies. The author declares no conflicts of interest. And then publication information. The study, it's under the Artificial Control of Giant Converse Metroelectric Effect. So it's in some sort of a thing. I want to know. That's where we're at now. I want to know what that is. Let's go look at the. Let's go to my buddy here for a minute. Because this is kind of pretty interesting. Let's go to chat. I also have, it's my Zippy, and I also have Flash, my Gemini Pro, but I haven't, I've been sticking with the, so I'm going to ask him what these materials are. That's why I like having Zippy, because then I can read an article, because I'm just trying to learn stuff. I'm trying to open my mind a little bit, as we're getting older here, because I'm just like a sponge for all stuff. Alright, so let's find out what this material is. Alright, so this is the vanadium. What is vanadium? Let's see what it says. Vanadium is a chemical element, V, in the atomic number 23. Cool. See, this is why I would never be able to learn all this in an instant. Hence the name Zippy. Key properties of vanadium. Silvery gray. They use it in batteries. Density 6.11 G/CM3 melting point 1910 Celsius 3,407 degrees Fahrenheit. Boiling is 3,407 Celsius 6,000. Electronegativity 1.6 Pauling scales. Common use of valium. Valium is widely used to strengthen steel. Forming valium carbonate enhances aerospace. Valium allows jet engine instructions because it's high thing because it can do heat, a lot of heat. Batteries. Valium is used in redox flow batteries. Promising for energy source. Catalytics. Chemical pigments, natural currents, is found in its pure form state, but is represented in over 60 different materials, including vanadite, carbonite, and peridotite. It's also found in fossil fuels like crude oil, coal, and tar sand. Biological role is a trace element in some organisms, and human has no established biological necessity for it. Fun fact is named Vandius, named after the. Where is it found? Where is it found? We'll see where it's saying that you find it. Key sources. Okay. Key sources, minerals. So it's in a mineral. Occurs in over 60 minerals. So I'm not going to read them all, but it says it's, so this is a, something that's inside of something else. Crude oil, coal, then China has a lot of it. Of course, China's got all the good resources. Russia has a lot of it. South Africa, Brazil, United States has some. And Arkansas, Colorado, and Utah. So random. Three states we don't have it in. Other sources is slag. Seawater. So let's go on to the next one. That was actually fun. I want to see what this is. The CO2 layers. So now I can read an article and then I can run over here to my zippy and then get a little bit more. So why not, right? Why not get more info? So cobalt, iron, silicon was the CO2 FeSi. Class of Hugeler alloys. Hugeler alloys. Properties. Heavily metallicity. So lots of metal in it. Half ferromagnetic. This reminds me of No Man's Sky, which is one of my favorite games. You can sit there and pull out different minerals to make stuff. That's one of the best games I've ever had played. No Man's Sky. It's fun. I used to play that one. I think I actually put in 50 hours at one time. Just sit around and pull all the materials. It's pretty neat. Magnetic properties, except to say high temperature, high magnetic, crystal structure, thermal stability. Applications, spintronics. So we're using it for things with magnetics. Magnetic sensors, thermal devices, data storage, MRAM. So they're talking about the MRAM here. That's where I'm getting it from. Molecular beam, MBE, produces high quality crystals. Sputtering, common method of creating thin films of various substances. Pulse laser deposition, suitable for creating layers of substances. I would think something like a chip or CPU or something. Commons, annealing, post annealing challenges. The performance lays heavily on interface. Alright, so where is it found? Where is it found? Let's see what it says. It's cobalt iron, but I think it's engineered alloy. It's synthesized in labs, so it's not natural. It's created, so you're creating it by cobalt, iron, and silicon. It's often synthesize and control environments. Arc welding, sintering, thin film fabrication for those. So it's man-made. You just raw materials: cobalt, iron, and silicon. So I would assume we can get some other material from other planets. We'd probably have some more fun stuff to play with. So let's try now this one here. The Petro. It's all about, I guess, just mixing and matching stuff and trying to make new stuff. And then once in a while you get lucky and get something really good out of it. That's what it sounds like. Alright, let's just see what this last one is here. I'm just curious. The piezo something, something, something. Piezo layers are thin materials that exhibit piezoelectric effects. Ceramic materials, crystal materials, so gel process, applications. It's just amazing. You just type one thing and it just spits out all this stuff. You don't need to have a textbooks or anything anymore. Alright, let's go. It just finished. So let's do this last piece here. So ceramic materials, lead, zircon, tyrate. Can't use a strong piezos. Barium tyrate. Potassium, sodium, nobate. Crystal materials, quartz. Gallium, sorry. A lot of these words I'm not saying right, but. Polymeric materials, PVDF. Solo gel process involves coating a substance with a sol, S-O-L, with that transfers the gel into heat. It's used for spinning, which we've screen printing. For precise mechanical energy harvesting, mechanical telecommunications, thickness. It's very small. Where is it found? All right, so we'll finish up with this one. I just was curious. Anything that has to do with in the future computing, I'm all about. Some materials exhibit naturally due to their non-centromesmic crystal structure. Quartz. Common mineral found in abundance of earth crust. Quartz, SiO2. Rochelle, salt. Potassium, sodium, taurate. See, that's why I think of No Man's Sky, because it was all those things you learned all the new chemicals when you were taking them out of the ground. It was pretty fun. Found in natural crystals. Tourmaline group. Engineered materials. Lead, barium. So it's like they engineer it, or it's found in research labs for certain techniques. Raw materials, we say quartz, lead, petro, chemical derivatives, commercial availability. Pretty interesting stuff. So that's a little thing about MRAM that we'll see in the future. I'm still going to pick my system for later, but I just saw that article and it seemed like about 20 minutes long, so I figured I would do it. All right, great. I'll talk to you guys in a little bit.